The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Legendarium Blue Team. You have chosen wisely. Please go to patreon.com/legendarium to support the show.
Every party has a pooper. That's why we invited Todd Party Pooper.
Thanks. You can send that one to Megan. All of the hate mail for that one from the troop of Todd can go to that one. Welcome to the Legendarium. We are the Blue Team, and we are here to talk about Dresden. And since we're going to be talking about Dresden,
the Blue Team, the mighty, mighty Blue Team.
Sorry. Oh boy, here we go. Because it's the Blue Team, you know that it is me, Todd Wente, I'm your host, and Megan is with us for Dresden, and Ken. And so we are we happy about this book? Are we happy to be together?
We're happy to be together.
It's been, 6 weeks since we recorded our last one together?
It's been a while.
It's been a long time.
Has it been that long time? I don't know.
Yeah, it's been long enough that there has been no change in the COVID situation and the pandemic around the world, except to say that it's still here. But while you're listening to this, hopefully you're listening to this as kind of a relief from the pandemic. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Dresden. And I don't know about you, but I was the reason that we had to wait so long to start reading this book.
Todd decided to go to school or something.
I remember looking at my phone and saying, okay, I'm reading it now, and expecting things to come in. And they did. Beep, 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 beep. And I was just like, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good book.
It's a lot of fun. There's a lot to say.
There is much about this book that made me go, waha.
Yeah. And those of you that couldn't hear that, Ken made a great big mouth opening face.
It was a wow face.
Yeah, it was a wow face.
Wow face.
And you know, with no further ado, those of you that have visited us before, you know all the housekeeping. Visit us on Discord. Oh my gosh, I probably better not say that too much because they already visit us on Discord a lot. We got a lot of stuff.
Oh, we want more people on Discord. It's fun on there.
Discord is the best.
Especially the Butcher channel. It's the best.
You know what? Discord is not Twitter. I love Discord.
Oh, we've been having a good time with that, and hopefully you guys have been having a wonderful time with that as well. So let's make sure that we go ahead and start with our recap.
You know, spoilers. I think, I think it is only appropriate, by the way, that we are recording this on Harry Potter's birthday.
Yeah.
Did you notice?
Yeah,
it's his 40th birthday.
One Harry wizard for
talking about one Harry wizard on another Harry wizard's birthday.
Really want to tell a J.K. Rowling joke, but I won't.
I think it's funny that we called him a Harry wizard.
I think you both were cool.
Well, I think I already ruined it. How does Harry cross the street? Walking. J.K. Rowling.
Okay.
Thanks everybody for listening.
And
you can send the hate mail to Megan at thelegendariumpodcast.com.
Oh, no one will send you hate mail.
I still don't have a login.
They
for
will
email.
Send hate mail to me, I'm sure. So let's go ahead and get in. Ken, you've got a recap for us on this one.
Oh my gosh. We all read stories in part to learn something, right? And sometimes the answer is the most obvious right there in front of us. The most obvious answer is the one we were searching for. You know what I'm talking about.
No.
You know what I'm talking about. You
I
know.
Do.
So anyway, okay, so Harry Dresden is dead. Fine, Todd, you win. Harry's dead.
I win.
Nope. He was not actually dead.
Shh. He's dead. He was dead.
Okay.
He was dead.
And he's stuck in the in-between with all of the souls who have an axe to grind and work left to do. Namely, in Harry's case, it means solving his own murder. But also, he needs to protect his friends from Sheet exiles who are feeling their confidence now that the red vamps are gone, along with Chicago's resident wizard problem solver. Fortunately, said problem maker solver. slash silver.
Nice. I like that.
Is now in position to deal with an old necromancer who took a bullet to the face and now who wants to continue the dark Halloween death that she tried in life and use Mortimer Lindquist, Chicago's large medium con man, as their brand new bodysuit. He's a large
medium. Did you just say she was using Mortimer as a bodysuit?
Coming back also gives Harry a chance to go all George Bailey. I'm just moving on. And see what life looks like without him. And boy, like removing a cork and turning the bottle over, all the dark forces are filling the void where the Red Court used to be. Winter and May, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. His brother is brooding. His apprentice is eating people. I might have that backward. I don't know.
Or maybe it's correct. We're not really sure.
Molly's gone a little crazy, one part guilt, one part pressure of being the only wizard game in town, and one part because her training is under new management thanks to an ancient fae deal and obligation, and her training has graduated from snowballs to ice balls. Side note, I called it. So you're on one, I called one.
I got one, you got
no,
one.
No, you didn't. Go ahead, continue.
We'll talk about that. Murphy has a buzz cut and a partly guilty conscience about being a field general of Harry's raiders who are really ready to charge into battle like Lord Cardigan's Light Brigade. Look it up. Backed by one gentleman, Johnny Marcone, complete with a supergroup base or a supernatural community center, depending on your certain point of view, built on the ruins of Harry's basement apartment.
Nice Jedi reference.
Thank you. In between, Harry's life flashes before our eyes, which is kind of neat, and Harry confronts all of that guilt for, you know, decisions made and consequences unintended.
Finally.
Yeah. It gives him a chance to reflect on, you know, the law of unintended consequences. It only took 13 books and arranging his own death. By the way, he arranged his own death. That's right. Kincaid actually did it, just like all of the evidence suggested. Sometimes it's the most obvious answer.
You guys both guessed that at like the I re-listened to our previous episodes, and you both guessed that about the same time. So good job.
Thanks. But we kind of talked ourselves out of it. So
no, we didn't. No, we didn't.
You just threw out all the ideas.
That's true. So what we never saw coming, though, is Harry himself hired Kincaid to do it.
Yeah,
nobody saw.
In an effort to prevent himself.
But he did do it so that he could prevent being the Winter Night, which I believe Ken said.
I thought you.
No, I did.
I wrote it down.
I think we all did it.
That someone killed Harry so he wouldn't be the Winter Night. I wrote down the things.
But you thought it was Murphy.
I did it first until I read the
little thing where Murphy's going crazy.
Yeah.
You know how right. I did that? See how I did that?
I was so proud of
myself. So what we never saw was Harry himself hired Kincaid to do it in an effort to prevent him from having to fulfill obligations made by tapping that.
Yep.
And the plan works right up until it doesn't, because just like all of Harry's plans,
things go wrong.
His body, supernatural jumper cables, and
You were right. There was never a body.
And Megan right that Queen Mab was going to figure out a way.
Him and that he was alive.
Yeah.
Look at all of the things.
Mostly dead means slightly alive.
That's right.
There's a big difference between all dead.
Okay.
And
so,
dead.
But Harry had a choice to be dead or not.
Look at all the so many things.
And he chose not.
Look at all the so many things we got right. We are so smart.
Yeah, we all got right. And the little sliver of things that we all kind of missed.
All right. So question from Discord and from me. How much newfound respect do you have for Mort? And what action do you expect him from him going forth? And how much do you want him to be involved?
Great question.
Did Jack Murphy actually kill himself at his desk? Mm. I have questions. Did Kincaid have a second counter deal with Queen Mab to ensure that Harry's body gets to a place where Mab could resurrect him, namely the Demon Reach? Or was that just on his own? Or was that just a fortunate coincidence?
I don't know. I think Mab always has some kind of tally on Harry.
I think too. Two more. Exactly
also
how
Demon
powerful.
Reach. He's right there.
I know. He's
the
right
water.
There. He's in the water. Two more. Exactly how powerful or how malleable is Harry that he has saved super duper natural beings. Oh, I'm sorry. That he has several super duper supernatural beings lined up to control his strings. Because he's got archangels and fallen angels and she-ladies and
the devil.
And demon reach.
Everybody wants a piece of Harry. How super-duper must he be?
The one who walks behind?
Yeah. Oh, and he walks behind.
He is chaos.
All right.
I want to control the chaos.
Final question. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Both.
And for the record, if I were incorporeal, I would absolutely watch an explosion from point blank range.
That was cool.
I absolutely would do that.
That's one of those moments where I really, Especially when he says, because when else was I going to get this chance?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
So. Those are fun moments.
All right, go back to that. Star Wars or Star Trek? Let's just get it out of the way
both.
Right now. Both, absolutely.
I once took a test that was, you know, how much Star Wars versus Star Trek are you? I got 51 to 49. And I honestly don't remember which was the higher one.
The entertaining thing for me about all of those, one of them is science fiction. The other one is a mythology
space
tale.
Fantasy.
Yeah.
This was on Discord. A couple of people pointed this out. It's like, it's got to be one or the other. Or was they asked if Molly was just too young, or does it have to be one or the other? I don't think it has to be one or the other. I think it's ridiculous that I mean, I get the geek
it's
argument.
Like,
everybody wants to have the mine is better, yours is better, you know, whatever. You can like both.
It's the same kind of argument, at least for me, it's always been the same kind of argument between fantasy and science fiction.
Yeah.
Both.
Well, and I tend to think that there's going to be a lot more overlap because I used to look at it as, you know, Star Wars was the movies. If I'm thinking back 20 years ago, Star Wars was primarily movies and Star Trek was primarily a TV show. So if you were more interested in the overarching story, it was Star Wars. And if you were more interested in like the characters and the day-to-day and the things that happen, it was Star Trek. And I am up for both.
Yeah.
Just, you know, different moods.
One just happens to be a little more episodic.
Yeah, but now it's there's a lot more crossover where there are a lot more Star Trek movies than there were and a lot more Star Wars series and things going on.
That's true.
And always novelizations for everything.
And the fact that Molly's netherworld, or her construct,
her inner sanctum, her fortress, her inner sanctum,
her mind palace.
Yeah,
that's what I said.
The bridge of the end. Did you say that? I couldn't hear it over things going on this side.
Ah,
sorry about that. Yeah, that is the bridge of the Enterprise, the original Enterprise.
Yeah,
I'm kind of like, okay.
Well, I love that there's like, you know, people start fighting and there's like this music that starts up. Dun, dun, dun. He's like, you know the music.
You could absolutely hear it.
I totally know what the music is.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, you have a soundtrack?
The best part was that she looks at Harry's ghost apologetically and says, I watched it a lot with my dad. Yeah. I kind of went,
oh.
Yeah. I watched it because of my brother. We all have our...
And don't touch
story.
The closet.
I watched it because...
Don't touch the closet.
Is that where we're going right off?
No, let's go there right off.
I kind of want to start by saying I tried the audiobook this time.
Oh, what'd you think?
Not unfortunately, because he did a really good job. And then I forgot to look up his name. But I didn't get the James Marsh.
Oh, did you get the other one?
Because apparently he was not originally available when the audiobook was released. Or was, you know, when they wanted to get that done. So I listened to the other guy. And I'm just not an audiobook person. He did a really, really good job. But I would have to listen to certain chapters multiple times to get everything because I'm a distracted audiobook listener, apparently.
No, I get that. You know what? Having been almost exclusively audiobook now for the past year and a half or so, I will tell you the two things that I really love about audiobooks are that I can do them while I drive. Mm-hmm. And I can do them at 1.5 times speed, which is a little bit better for how my brain works. The two things that I hate about them is that I do them when I drive, which means that I don't always remember everything very carefully. Mm-hmm. And I can listen to them at 1.5 times speed, which means that sometimes I'm so busy laughing at things that I don't catch what came after.
Yeah, I actually checked out the audiobook and the, the Kindle version at the same time. And so when I heard something in the audiobook that I really liked, I'd go and I'd look it up on the Kindle and then highlight and make notes.
I did that for a while too on someone, but I haven't done it lately.
But again, it just took me a really long time.
I think there are books coming up that I'm going to have to do that for, but we'll leave that kind of dangling for a little while.
It's true.
And let's talk about...
Wait, Ken, do you want to weigh in on this whole audiobook thing? Did you find the James Marsters version? Is that what you listened to?
I did. I bought it from Audible, and they had the James Marsters version.
Excellent as per usual.
Yep.
It
was fantastic. Although I'm kind of curious to listen to the other guy. I want to hear the other guy.
I thought he did great.
So do we want to talk about this in linear fashion and kind of move through it? Or do we want to take it by topics and go with some chunks?
I almost feel like we need to take it by linear in linear fashion this time because it's just the way it moves is
so
kind of built like that.
At the very beginning.
I'm sorry. I want to ask one question that was asked on Discord. Because I was thinking this too. Do you like that this book had a radical change of pace from changes specifically and from the last couple of books that we read, where everything was just so, the stakes were so high and the pace was so great. And this one just kind of felt a little bit more like a breather.
No.
You did not like that.
I did not like it. I really struggled with the, I think part of it for me is it all of a sudden got really post-apocalyptic, where Harry goes back, it's 6 months later. Again, I totally called the Washington Irving thing. Wait, it doesn't matter. where, you know, Harry disappears for a period of time and misses a chunk of time.
Yeah.
But fortunately, it was only 6 months. But we go back and it's very post-apocalyptic and all of his friends are understandably depressed because he's gone and they're fighting in kind of a crappy world. But I really struggled with seeing everybody in that way, and the fact that Harry couldn't help them for the first chunk of time. And sure. it felt a little bit jarring that we had to stop and do some world building again, where they're like, okay, and here's Sir Stuart, and he's now going to explain to you how to be a ghost, and this is how you protect yourself, and these are what all of the different kinds of ghosts are. And I missed hitting the ground running with Harry. I will say, though, that I mean, by the end I had bought into it, and Jim Butcher, just nobody does endings like Jim Butcher. He's so good at making it all come together and then exploding. It's just so good. Anyway, really that's good. What I have to say.
I have to admit, I didn't feel like it did change and become a breather.
Huh.
And maybe it's because I listened to it at 1.5 times speed. Or maybe it's because by the time I finally got into it. So I started reading or listening on, I took a week of vacation from my job because I can only stand being there for so long.
I did too. Good
and
for you.
Yeah, it was
not the same week, and we
very pleasant,
together.
Very pleasant. But I started listening to it on Monday that I took that vacation.
Okay.
And every spare minute I was listening to it. I was mowing the lawn and listening to it. Normally I listen to it first thing in the morning, last thing at night, was I'm, you know, doing stuff around. I was listening to it all the time. In fact, even when we went to, we stayed at a hotel up in Lava Hot Springs, Idaho, and while my wife and daughter were sleeping, I went for a run so that I could have uninterrupted time so that I could listen to Jim Butcher and Dresden Files, and I came back and I wanted to look at my family and say, it's so cool! And they looked at me and they said, just leave us alone, we want to sleep. And I'm like, but it's like 8 o'clock in the morning. They're like, exactly, just leave us alone. So I sat down and listened to some more. I mean, for me, it felt like it was moving at the same kind of pace, same kind of breakneck speed that it goes through. But then again, maybe that's just me.
Well, and again, maybe it's just me doing like this different thing where I was trying to listen to an audiobook, and that is not something I have been doing normally.
And a different person. I'm used to James Marsters' style, and I'm used to the way that he reads and to his cadence and some of those kinds of things. And so it really, for me, it really moved.
The Dresden books always feel like there are like 6 books packed in there.
Yeah.
This is this section, and now it's this section, and this happens. It's pretty great.
Although I have gotten to the point where I'm pretty good now. Normally what I've done in the past is I've just listened and see where it goes and just, oh, you can't believe that. Oh, I can't believe that. Oh, I can't. I'm now getting to the point where he says, chapter 39. I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of know where we're going to be at in the plot process on this one. Because I don't look and see how many chapters there are, but it's just kind of how his process runs. Granted, if you were reading a book, you'd be able to look and say, oh, I only got that much left in the book. Yeah. I think I know what's coming. But now I've kind of gotten to that point with the number of chapters on the audiobook.
I will admit that just because of how big the material was in changes, it felt like a little bit of a letdown, not in terms of disappointment, but in terms of the gravity was less with this book. That's what it felt like to me. However, it didn't take me long to get into it and to get excited about it and to get to the point where my notes ended up becoming just a bunch of, oh, and how about this? Oh, yeah, and how about that? Oh, and how about this part?
Well, one of the things that may have made it feel that way, I know it felt like there was a pause in life, is that first chapter or so, where he's spending his time talking to Murphy's dad.
And that was,
no, we all, y'all called that, right? As soon as he starts talking to the guy behind the desk, the captain.
Yes. Nope. The moment, Yeah, the moment he showed up at the cop behind the desk, I was like, oh, that's Murphy's dad.
Yeah, yeah.
So especially,
you didn't catch that one?
No.
Especially after Carmichael showed up to get him. And it was nice to have all these little callbacks, and we get to tie some loose ends off, and that's kind of neat.
Now, here's the piece that in that moment, I knew this was going to be critical as we were moving forward, was when Harry tried to open his sight.
Yeah.
In this cop house. And as he's trying to do that, then the angel shuts him down, right? The guard. Yeah. And he's like, nope, don't do that, son.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so there's going to be something about this that's going to help him, but also cause him problems as he goes through this experience.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting, at least for me, I think it's interesting, that the only piece of his magic that stayed with him easily was his sight.
Yes.
His ability to see through all of the illusions, all of the things that are going on, all of the mundane pieces of life. Mm-hmm. And he gets to see to the critical nature of what things are. That stays with him. Mm-hmm. I find that, I don't know if you guys thought like I did, but I thought, oh, that's a really interesting perspective. Is Jim Butcher giving us kind of a view of what he thinks is critical about life and the afterlife and all those things, seeing through all of these visions?
The insight.
Yeah. But I really, that was one of those things that I kind of went, my first thought was, oh, this is going to be really cool in the book. My second thought was, oh, this is a really cool thing about life. This is a level 3 moment early in the book that doesn't necessarily follow all of his other level 3 stuff that we've talked about in the past.
That's true. I mean, Harry says all the time that a person's magic is tied up in their whole self, mm-hmm. their physicality and everything like that. So I'm with you where I think it's interesting that the one thing that he really still had was his sight, was the thing that was really very internal that helped him to see people as they are and understand them a little bit better.
Yeah.
I loved the concept of memories as
weapons.
So
and not just as weapons, but as authority.
Yeah.
As he points out later. And getting a chance to go back and do the, if this were a TV show, doing the flashback episodes and getting to see where Harry came from and all of that. And and there were so many little gut punchy moments. Not like, you know, drive me to tears or anything like that, but just like, oh, I know how this ends, you know. Like, for example, when he first learns how to create fire, and then Dumorne gives him a baseball mitt, and it's this touching moment, and you go, I know how this ends, and it does not end well. And and so he was all excited, and the moment I saw him with the baseball mitt, all my heart did was go, he's gonna throw baseballs at him. I'm like, well, that's just harsh.
Oh my gosh, poor Harry. Just the concept that a person, a sum of a person is the memories that they created. It's just a really cool concept. The fact that the evil ghosts that I want to say are called the Lemurs.
And the Wraiths.
I think. And the Wraiths, they're eating memories. Mm-hmm. And that's all you have. And when you use a weapon against somebody, you have to give up a memory. And I just think it's really poignant, that moment when Bob and Butters shows up and they're like, here, Harry, eat these jewels. And Harry realizes that he gets his memories back and he's going to be okay for a hot minute.
Yeah.
But only a hot minute.
Well, and Uriel, I'm jumping to the back of the book.
I know,
we're jumping
all over, and it's late.
I know, we say we're going to go linearly, and then we just jump all over the place. But when he talks to Uriel and says, I'm just a soul without a body, he's like, you got that backwards. You know, you have a body. You are a soul.
Yes.
And which harkens back to what Bob was saying several books ago when Harry just started to learn soul fire. He's like,
all you mortals, you all get so caught up in this idea of a soul.
It grows back. which we get to see now how it grows back.
Yeah, I certainly got a kick out of that. But, you know, the idea of Harry's first encounter as a ghost, and watching what all the rest of the ghosts take for granted. Mm-hmm. And he keeps saying over and over in the first like third of the book, man, I hate being the new guy.
Yeah.
And you get a feel that maybe for the first time in a very long time, Harry is getting a dose of what everybody around him has gotten throughout this entire book series. Yeah. Whether we're talking about Billy and the Alphas, or we're talking about Butters, we're talking about any of the people that show up in these books, he's kind of like, yeah, just hang on, it'll be all right, you know? And now he's sitting there and the guy's saying, stand behind me, it will be all right.
I know. But there's this, he has to learn so many rules so quickly. Even right down to, you know, where can I go during the daytime when the sun comes up? Because everything's washed anew and it could basically, I would disappear.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think it's really cool that he already has had his grave set up.
Yeah. Isn't that
interesting? That was fun getting to see his grave.
That his grave is still open.
Mm-hmm.
All this time.
Which it was paid for.
Paid for.
Specifically to be left open.
Hmm.
Which is weird because didn't they say they had a funeral or some kind of wake or something? Did they not bury anything?
They had a wake.
No body,
they
though.
They didn't.
Plenty of people do funerals without bodies.
That's true.
Yeah, we did a funeral without a body, but that's a different story.
But again, Murphy didn't believe that he was dead, so she would never allow that.
No body,
maybe
no
not.
Dead.
Just thinking this through as I'm talking.
Yeah.
Bear with me, folks.
One of the things about this whole deal, though, is that it gives us an opportunity for Jim Butcher to create a part of the world that we've never really dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
We've dealt with spirits, and he has this idea that, yes, they're part of what's left behind, and they've gone insane, but now he knows why.
Yeah.
And I think, maybe this doesn't have any bearing, and maybe people are going to be going, oh, of course it does. But I think that this is one of the pieces that Jim Butcher has put together for us so that he can use it again as we move forward through this book series.
That's likely.
I have a feeling that there are probably going to be some individuals that we have really been sad to see go that we might see come back in
like
some
a force
form
ghost.
Or another. Like a force ghost,
well,
yes.
Well, especially if Mort ends up being a more integral part of the team.
Which I'm almost cool with. It was nice to see a little bit of a redemptive story for Morty. I mean, we see him early in the book series. I think he's in book one, right?
Hey, I got to... yes.
And all he is this slimy con artist who uses his gifts to grift people out of money, and which, come on, I mean, lots of people with something like that would do the same thing. But he's kind of come around, and I think that's partly Harry's influence, is Harry has shown how to be the good guy in this world and stand up to supernatural forces. I think it's kind of rubbed off on Morty a little bit.
That's a perspective. I think there's another perspective.
Okay.
And the other perspective is that everybody else in the supernatural community sees Morty that way, but Morty has known for a long time that there's something more going on here and that he's developed that, not necessarily because of Harry and all the rest of them, but because he recognizes that he truly has this gift, and that there are people suffering, and that maybe he's just really a nice guy.
Maybe, but it also could be a little bit of, if I don't help these ghosts, they'll just keep coming and bugging me. Did you ever see that show Ghost Town, Ricky Gervais?
No.
Look it up. It's an awesome little movie. It's so funny. But it's kind of that similar thing where he finds out he can talk to ghosts, and they all just start pestering him, and so he ends up helping them, because if he doesn't, they won't go away.
In other words, what you're saying is that when you see Morty, or when you hear Morty, you think of Ricky Gervais.
Oh, I do now.
I was going to say, it's like...
I like Ricky Gervais. He's funny.
He's like Whoopi Goldberg on Ghost.
Yeah. I'm just saying that's... There could be a little bit of that. I like to think that he's altruistic because he is helping a lot of ghosts. I mean, the fact that his home was a sanctuary for them.
I think he's more altruistic now. I don't think he started out that way.
Oh, I don't think he did either. But
I don't
necessarily think that he was a con artist either. I think that he was probably taking money for doing a service, and he was very, because if you remember that first interaction that he has where he and Dresden are going back and forth, he's like, look, just because you don't understand what I do doesn't mean that you can call it a con.
Right.
And then they're on a television show and Dresden shoots everything out. But, you know, Morty's standing there saying, come on, this is not, you need to treat others with a little bit of respect just because you don't get it. I'm holding true to the fact that Morty was not just a con man.
Well, it
doesn't mean that
Harry
he wasn't using his gift
that.
To make some money, but Harry's the same. He uses his gift to make money.
Right.
So is
find
that
what you're good at and see
thing?
If you can make money from it.
There
it
you
makes
go.
Sense.
I remember Kathy Lee Gifford saying something about that, but that's not this kind of podcast.
No. Where was I going to go there? But how cool was it that Mort ends up getting kidnapped by the corpse taker? Because if you'll recall in our recaps, I think Todd said something at one point. He's like, but what about all the people that Harry has killed? What if they bear a grudge? And I went, oh, no. So I'm really glad we only had to deal with one of those villains in this book.
So far.
But the Corpse Taker is such a good one.
I'm disappointed that I didn't see her as being the one that he has to deal with. Because that made much sense.
I had some other ones that I was sure we were going to see that we did not. I kind of figured we'd see Justin DeMorn.
And I was worried it was going to be Margaret.
Oh, ooh, yeah, that would have been hard.
That would have been random.
Well, but Corpse Taker made a choice to stay.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, that's the other thing that we get. The idea that we saw that in the very beginning. Oh, I saw the light. They didn't tell me it was going to be a freaking train.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it's this opportunity for choice again. And some of our listeners have keyed up on this too. And they've talked about the fact that Jim Butcher is all about the choices we make. And even at death, Harry gets a choice. Sounds like a lot of other people had a choice to get on the train or not. And Corpse Taker obviously has planned for a very, very, very long time to not get on the train.
Right.
Yeah.
And keep coming back and keep coming back and keep coming back.
And just look for the right skin suit to.
She's been milking a lot of petty magical people.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of horcruxes floating around with the Corpse Taker's name on them.
More than few.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just had to throw that one out. I'm sorry. So
hey, I was gonna make a recap filled with Harry Potter references, and I just couldn't.
Hopefully,
bring myself
we don't
to
have
do
people
it.
Upset at us for that. So we've had an opportunity for Harry to. How did you feel when you saw Bob with Butters?
I laughed so hard. It made me so happy.
It felt like the rightest pairing. it really did.
Give the very opinionated ghost to the most awkward person. But also, I just really enjoyed the pairing of the two, where Bob kind of started to take on aspects of Butters, and seeing the inside of Bob's home.
In my mind, I'm thinking
like I Dream of Jeannie with all of the pillows, but also
here's a big screen TV.
Old spread of all the food. From Butters' mom's house.
Right. Now, they both, and Butters, I love seeing the progression of Butters. I love seeing how he's grown and how he's become more outgoing. And I think a large part of that is in this last 6 months has been Bob.
Yeah.
You know, how Bob has affected him, how he's more assertive now.
I certainly got a kick out of Bob saying to Harry, well, Butters understands magical theory, even if he doesn't understand magical practice, which is far more than I can say for you.
True.
And I was like, wow, that's kind of painful there.
But I could also see, as I understand it, Murphy gave Bob to Butters. And I can see Murphy like holding the skull and Bob being inappropriate. And she's like, I don't want to deal with this. You take her, Butters.
You take this.
You need a friend.
Yeah. And hallelujah that she made the choice to give Bob to Butters and not Molly.
Not Molly, not Thomas, not, you know, Father Fort Hill. It just makes sense with Bob.
Even though Harry had earlier said, you're cut off, that evil part of you is gone, which comes back to, here again,
that
unintended
was,
consequences on that one, right?
Yeah. I gasped at that when we realized. He's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the evil part of me. It's fine. It's just gone. And I went, oh no.
Right there at the beginning when the skull with blue eyes pops up, I'm like, where have we seen this before?
Yeah, yeah.
I was just glad it wasn't regular Bob, because I just thought somehow Bob had gone evil.
Oh.
And then regular Bob showed up and I was just very grateful, but also two Bobs? That's terrifying.
Double Bob.
It makes you wonder at all of the possibilities.
I'm interested to see what happens now that Harry is not dead. I feel like I want to know how many, I'm sure we'll see this in the next book, but I want to see how much his obligation as Winter Knight keeps him from doing all of the stuff he used to do.
I still think that I'm just going to predict that this next book is going to take place a lot in the Never Never. I don't think we're going to actually get Harry back in the real world for a while.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to take place, in the Never Never and the She areas and stuff. I don't know how much of Molly and Murphy and everybody there's going to be in the next book. I'm sure there'll be, plenty, but my point of that being, I think that Bob and Butters stay together. I think that's a pairing now. I don't think Harry gets Bob back.
At least for the moment.
At least for a while.
At least for the moment. And part of the reason,
maybe he does.
Part of the reason that that might make sense is that Harry still needs to be rebuilt. His body may have been being kept alive on life support, but he's got to remember how to be a human being. And this is going to be pretty interesting. This is going to be a pretty interesting situation and period of time for him, where he's now absolutely the property of the winter lady of Mab, queen of air and darkness. And we have to be careful not to say her name too many times. We've said it twice, but it's been different people, so that's okay. Remember, if you say it three times, you got a problem.
Never mind. I remembered. Thank you.
Did you catch this little part in the book when they were in the Hall of Do-Gooders or whatever? I can't remember what it's called, but when
the Hall of Justice?
Yeah, when they're in the Hall of Justice and they're doing their sparring. Murphy and not Sonya, whatever his name was.
You know, yeah, Sonya Knockoff. I know the guy you're talking about.
You know, and they come in and he asks Butters when he's going to get in here and train with a sword.
The Chicago Alliance.
And my lights went, wait a second. Who called this just this last episode?
Yeah.
You were right.
Oh, no, I'm not right yet, but
it's
you
coming.
Were right that Daniel would this start is... to become a key player.
Daniel okay, has certainly was... become a key player.
Oh my gosh, we got to talk about that too.
And so,
but anyway, it was a throwaway line about getting Butters in there to learn how to spar with a sword, and
oh,
and I went, oh,
yep.
Yeah,
he totally. I wasn't confident about that prediction before, but I'm a little more confident about it now, especially since I went back and the Lenanchi. You know, he's very good at throwing in these casual lines that you don't catch at first.
That's true.
That and when you go looking back, you go, oh my gosh. And so now,
well,
there's
and as
another
we recall
one.
With Billy starting out, he was a little wimpy kid.
Yeah.
Teenage kid when he started being a werewolf, and now he's pure awesome. So, I mean, anything is possible.
Not only that, but we also have lots of mentors for both of those individuals.
True.
That they can work with. Murphy certainly has always been able to hold her own against larger and more impressive physical specimens. So why not have an opportunity for both Butters to be able to learn what he needs to learn in order to become a little bit more safe, a little bit more of a player.
Yeah.
But also to have Daniel step up to the plate and really take over and become the heir apparent to his father.
He's really, that kid is headstrong. This question almost made the cut, but it didn't. Is the
so go ahead him, and say it.
Him asking or him letting I'm trying to figure out
use
a way
words,
to say
Dan.
It.
Use
I'm
words.
I'm trying. I'm I don't know.
Gang.
He let the secret out in front of a white court vampire.
Yeah.
Oh no.
That yeah. Murphy is holding two of the swords.
That was just...
And you could just see his face as Murphy goes...
Thank you for giving
Daniel,
away one of our secrets
and
tonight,
at, and all of a sudden, you could just see... I mean, even on the page and in the audio, you could just see his face go...
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
When he realizes exactly what he just did.
Yeah.
He's like, oh my gosh.
And then Murphy... turning around and finding a way to still make that work.
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, Murphy is the coolest. She made me so happy. Like that was one that I had to go back and I'm like, wait, I feel like I missed something because I somehow, I don't know, a noisy car went past me on my walk. But I went back and I listened to it and I was like, I'm so glad that I went back and listened to that because that was the most satisfying thing I've ever read.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
/ listened to on an audiobook.
Murphy's respect for the law will always be Murphy's respect for the law, but she is no longer bound by the law. And this Murphy looks a lot scarier to me than Murphy ever has before.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Because she has a buzz cut.
That's not why she looks scarier. But I will say that that image kind of helped fill out this image that I have of her of, oh my goodness, everybody's really going off the deep end. Murphy.
Yeah.
Molly.
Nobody's doing well with Harry's death in the new world they have to live in.
But you know, isn't it interesting that the two women mm-hmm. in Harry's life mm-hmm. are the two who seem to have taken the most radical departures away from their previous lives. Murphy, who always was, we're gonna follow the law. We are not going to step outside the law at all.
Yeah.
And she's very comfortable doing it as long as everybody is very clear about what they're doing now.
Right.
And Molly, who was always about family and about staying close and protecting her little brothers and sisters and mm-hmm. everything else, is now unsure if she isn't a monster herself and wants to stay away from family.
Also, who was it who said that Molly and Mab were going to be a problem later on? I believe it was Ken.
I believe that was.
Yeah.
Was Ken catching a little line?
That only because I read it the second time.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. But yeah.
Molly becoming this murder machine was one of the more heartbreaking things.
Oh my gosh. Could you just see?
So here's an interesting thing. You know, they keep talking about the fact that Molly has turned to murder. And they keep talking about these people that start showing up.
Right.
And then you remember Molly turning around and saying, yeah, no, it's really easy. You make a bag appear like a gun and then the cop takes care of it himself. But the cop was on the take anyway. And so when he shoots and then the other guy shoots as well, it's not my fault. I'm not doing that. I'm just creating a situation that deals with the corruption that's around me all the time. And I leave something on them to make them afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure which makes me more afraid of Molly, the fact that she wants to make people afraid or that she is okay creating things that make people kill each other.
I don't know.
And everybody's thinking that Molly has gone off.
I feel like that was a desperate
off.
Measures thing, though.
Molly, everybody else is acting like Molly has gone off the deep end and is doing these killings. But when Molly makes it very clear, no, I'm not. I'm just making sure that they take care of it themselves.
Right.
And I heard echoes of Harry in saying, you know what? They're just getting what they deserve.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Kip Tan asked on Discord, how well is Harry keeping his promise to Charity about Molly? And do you think that he regrets his actions at all, or is that enough? I mean, because
Harry regrets everything.
Harry always regrets everything. But how well is he keeping that promise to Molly or to Charity, to keep her safe and to?
There's a really interesting. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Megan.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I think he's doing the best that he can with what he has. He can't control the outside world. And he, I mean, it was very unfair of him to ask Molly to make the call to Kincaid and be complicit in his murder, which is probably what made her go off of the deep end. So yeah, not so much fulfilling his promise there, but during his lifetime, he did everything that he could to protect her from the White Council and from everything and to teach her to be her strongest, best self.
Yeah,
maybe. And here's something I know I'm gonna rock both of your worlds for just
Todd
a second.
Todd will never let me be right about anything, you guys.
I'm not saying you're not right. I'm just saying that until I read this book, I would have absolutely agreed with you until we got to the part where Leah is talking with Harry.
Mm.
And she says, protecting her and making her weak isn't helping her survive.
Okay.
And I read that and said to myself, that is a really interesting perspective. Not sure I agree.
Right.
Not sure I'm 100% behind it. But then all of a sudden I start looking at this and Sirius is a heart attack. The next thing that came into my head was from Dodgeball. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. Rip Torn in that moment where he's throwing wrenches at everybody. You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. And I thought to myself, okay, pain is a pretty good teacher.
It's a good motivator.
And Harry sure learned a lot about how to build shields and defensive magic by getting baseballs thrown at him a lot. And he didn't do any of that. He was a kinder, gentler mentor, but did it really prepare Molly for what she was going to have to face when he was no longer there? And like I said, before I read this book, Megan, I would have been 100% in line with you that he had protected Molly, that he had kept his promise. But I'm not sure he'd thought about it in the terms of, but what if I'm gone? And what if she has to be there without me?
I don't think he thought of it in those terms, but I don't also don't think that he was necessarily wrong in the sense that her magic is not the same as his magic. And he's pointed it out several times. She is clearly very powerful in terms of magic, in terms of doing veils and mental magic and illusion and that sort of thing. Hers is not the kind of magic where you chuck baseballs at her and expect her to dodge them or block them or absorb them.
The reality is when you look at what Maggie did right after that scene with all of the illusions that she threw around to get those mortal servitors.
Molly, not Maggie.
When she's throwing up all of these illusions and she's got the fire and all of those different things going on, and the servitors are messing themselves up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you turn around and you say to yourself, it's pretty amazing what she has learned to do with her style of magic.
Yep.
And so I'll fully admit that, you know, Harry's looking at it from that perspective, saying, let's make sure the kid works on her strengths.
Right.
I got it. I'm with you.
And they have quite strength. I mean, she's clearly White Council level material.
But like I said,
in her
After I read that piece, it actually caused me to rethink some other kinds of choices that I make on occasion.
As a dad. Okay.
And I started saying to myself, have I really taken the time? Have I really thought through how I'm helping my sons and my daughters to face certain kinds of issues? Now, I'm not saying that I'm facing a life problem like Harry is, and they're going to have to live without me and fight werewolves and demons and Gorgons, oh my.
It's fairly unlikely.
But as I look at it, I'm kind of okay with it, with the way that I've approached things and the way that I've done things. Mm-hmm. But I also recognize that that is something that we don't think about very often when we are raising little kids and when we are responsible for the teaching of children to their adulthood. But it is something that perhaps we should consider.
Oh, well, that's depressing.
Yeah, you're welcome. My opportunity.
Bummer, man. He delivers.
My opportunity to bring a little bit of joy into everybody's life.
Every party has a pooper. That's why we invited Todd. Party pooper.
Thanks. You can send that one to Megan. All of the hate mail for that one from the troop of Todd can go to that one. So
you know I love you guys.
We get to the point. Yeah, we talked about that earlier today, too, on our private chat. We just like each other. So we get to a point where we can look at all of the people that Harry has had interaction with, and his absence has not only damaged them, damaged Chicago, damaged the world in many ways,
yeah,
it's damaged him too. His ability to think through things and to use his own magic and to rely on his own magic and his thoughtful and his thinking process has been damaged as well.
Yeah, I was very I've been concerned for a while now, as anybody who has listened to previous episodes possibly noticed, that Harry is going down the dark path. And so when he finally, like in that final battle, became corporeal and he was like, I'm going to, you know, be able to touch. And Mort was just like, no, only the crazy ghosts are the ones that can touch things. Only the crazy ghosts are the ones that become
corporeal
again. This is not, and I just was like, no, Harry, stop.
But at the same time, he was doing it with the mindset of, I'm not going to be here for long, so it doesn't matter.
In fact, his mindset of he's willing to do it for the benefit of others. I think that one of the rules that is really a piece that Jim Butcher plays with a lot is the idea of intent.
True.
I know that we've all heard the phrase, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, all those kinds of things. And I've said it myself too. But I think that the intent behind action matters an awful lot when we're looking at the kinds of actions that people take, especially when we're looking at these kinds of situations. Harry's intent matters.
Mm-hmm.
And his intent to try and save matters.
Well, it matters to him and his friends.
It certainly matters. And it matters when we get a chance to look at what the outcomes are. Because if he doesn't take the time to be at that moment, looks like there's going to be a lot more dead people in Chicago.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that he is sent out at the beginning. I guess Jack must tell him there are three people that you love who are going to be in trouble if you don't show up. And
solve your own murder.
That was
fantastic.
Yeah,
and solve your own murder. And I got to the end and I was like, who are the three people? Or was that just a red herring to be like, go, get out there. You have to solve your own murder. Or was that actually true? Was that an actual Molly and Butters and...
No,
I loved how he resolved that with Uriel.
Yeah.
Well, there had to be at least three people that he cared about that were going to have problems.
he had a bunch of friends. I mean, chances are
at least three of them were going to be messed up.
In trouble.
Probably all of them.
And I think we are clear that all of them were. Isn't it interesting that Jack's intent matters. Mm-hmm. Yes, I told a lie, mm-hmm. but I told the lie in order to get you to do something
to do
make
the right choice.
A choice.
Yeah.
And again, we come back to Butcher's tendency to want to talk about the fact that you have to make choices and you have
that
to own your choices.
That is one of my favorite themes in this book.
Yeah.
That Uriel points that out, that Harry gets to the end and Mab is just like, no, you have to do this. And then Uriel's like, and there's the lie. And Harry's just like, oh my gosh, that is so true. It's just so liberating to know that he can make a choice, that he doesn't have to do necessarily what he is told.
And the scales are balanced.
Yes.
Which is a little nice.
And that in his...
In that one instance.
Yeah.
I think that's going to play a big part in the kind of conflict that Harry will have as the Winter Knight as to just how much he is forced to do because of his commitment. And how much he remains not a monster.
Although, I like the use of the word monster because that takes me back to a conversation he had with the ghost in the graveyard, the little girl ghost.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so fun.
She's like, I know what you are. You're going to be a monster. And he is very offended. And she says, do you know what a monster is, young Shade? Power. Power and choice. Monsters make choices. Monsters shape the world. Monsters force us to become stronger, smarter, better. They sift the weak from the strong and provide a forge for the stealing of souls. Stealing, S-T-E-E-L-I-N-G.
The stealing, yes.
Even as we curse monsters, we admire them, seek to become them in some ways. Her eyes became distant. There are far, far worse things to be than a monster.
Yeah.
I just think that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Where was I going?
We need a catalyst.
I don't know, Ken. Where were you going?
There was... Oh, and once again, we get to see... With Uriel, we get to see Butcher talk about the importance of names again.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh my gosh, his reaction when Harry calls him Uri.
Yeah.
And
whoa. And he's like, I'm going to melt you with my eyes.
Yeah.
You know, for doing that. And he says Harry's name just right and...
With just the right inflection.
With just the right inflection, as did... Was it... I can't remember who the other one was. It wasn't He Who Walks Behind. It was somebody else. But
no.
But it comes up a couple of times in there. So again, the power of names.
Bringing up He Who Walks Behind and the earlier mention that we had of some of the flashback opportunities that we had, we get a chance to see some things that Harry has never really, that we've never learned about Harry's life.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard about them, but we've never seen them. And the moment where he conjures up fire, the moment when he runs away after seeing that Elaine is... Elaine?
Yeah.
No, yeah. Yes. And that he was going to be next, and so no, he's going to go ahead and run away. I think this flashback opportunity is one that Butcher puts in place, not just because he wants... And I think everybody would agree, not just because we want to... get a chance to see something that was a formative moment in Harry's life. And oh my goodness, of all the things that he chooses to do to knock over a liquor store.
Right? Ugh.
But that in doing so, he says, wait a minute, he could have killed me at any point in time. He's trying to make me into something. You referenced it before, that there are so many supernatural powers that are trying to pull Harry's strings,
right.
Make him dance, little marionette, dance, little boy, dance. And Harry is learning that he's got no strings on him if he doesn't want them. He can cut them himself.
Which I think is a huge line right there at the end of the book that has farther reaching implications than just the next story being him as the Winter Knight. Because he's got fallen angels and archangels and the whatever he who walks behind is and the she courts
and demon reach
and demon reach.
And of course, he's got friends that are made from the cosmic forces of the universe.
Yeah.
Yep.
All sitting there waiting to influence him. And now he's given the gift basically to realize that his soul, that his choice still matters.
One of the things that I really liked, and I don't know if you guys, and I realize we're kind of jumping away from the big battle at the end of this book.
Yeah, and I wondered if we cared about Fitz and Aristides or any
of
that.
What? Honestly, I loved, from the level one guy, I loved the fighting. The fighting really wasn't relevant to the book or to the story. I mean, it was great. It was fun. I love watching him attack Castle Corpse Taker and, you know, rescue Lindquist and everything. But honestly, I mean, other than the excitement and needing to be done, it's not the important part of this story.
I'm sorry. Who are you and what did you do
I'm
with
just
Ken?
I'm saying. I mean, every once in a while.
Ken was preferring a story over the punching?
Every once in a while. I'm just saying.
Can you write this down as a red letter day?
Uh-huh.
We need to be sure that we remember this.
Yes.
I did just get my testosterone levels checked and they're awfully low.
Well, you are over 40 and a man.
So
one of the other things that I think that was interesting about that, though, that I wanted to touch on, we talked a lot about all of the people in Harry's life that have been touched by Harry's passing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Charity and Michael have been touched by this as well. Remember when the reference is made that Daniel and Molly are both wearing armor that has been crafted by Molly's mom,
right,
by Charity. And the titanium rings inside the Kevlar and all
Love
of these
that.
Kinds of things. I'm impressed that these kids have grown into people that are willing to take upon themselves the responsibility of fighting bad things, the things that go bump in the night, because that's what their mentors did. That's what mom and dad did. That's a pretty powerful thing and a pretty powerful statement.
Yeah, I also kind of enjoyed the difference in the way Daniel and Molly treated Father Forthill, where you see Daniel is very deferential about it, and he goes to save and defend Father Forthill, and he will listen to that man, and Molly is just not anti, but she is not nearly as respectful, and Murphy has to call her out on it at one point where, you know, because again, they both grew up in the Catholic Church, and they were both maybe they weren't both very strong, but their parents are very faithful.
Yeah.
And yet Molly and Daniel are their own people, so they're going to react how they're going to react, which is kind of fun to see in siblings. It's just this reminder that you may grow up the same way in the same home, but not have the same point of view.
Yeah.
So let me ask a question about Molly that I've been dying to ask.
I was going to really quick, I just
go
wanted
ahead,
to
go
say,
ahead.
I love seeing Daniel as the brash, impulsive, reckless Michael. You
as
know?
The Luke Skywalker figure?
He is, you can almost, we don't get to see Michael when he's young. We get to see Michael when he is the baddest of the Knights of the Cross, you know, and he is already established as, I will wipe out whoever righteously needs being wiped out. We don't get to see the formative years. And now I feel like we almost get to see a little bit of a peek into the formative years of Michael through Daniel.
Michael 2.0.
Yeah.
And we see some glimpse into the formative years of Harry in watching how he handles Fitz.
Yeah.
I think that was interesting thing too.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how that goes in the future. And also, I think it's fascinating that he could really only reach Fitz as a ghost. Like, Harry being a ghost was actually a really big help in that whole situation to be able to talk Fitz through everything that he needed to do and to help Fitz to understand you're a lot stronger than you think you are. You have a lot of power that Aristides doesn't have, partly because you actually care about the people around you and they care about you and they will follow you. Well, maybe it's really fun to see the progression of that character just within this story.
Maybe he's somebody that Mortimer can take under his wing and say, hey, you know,
I about this gift wouldn't be surprised at all about that.
Sorry, what were you saying about Molly?
I've been dying to ask this question about Molly, and I'm curious as to what you guys are going to think. We now understand that the closet has the memory.
Right.
That was being protected and that she was supposed to have wiped away and all of those kinds of things, right? Now that Harry knows, has made a choice, has walked back through the door and is back to life, does that...
He was kind of dragged through the door, really.
Does that make Molly now free of the guilt and the burden that she's been carrying for that?
I think that's something that remains to be seen. Because it still happened. The world still became the world that it was because he wasn't there because of her. But I think that does... I would hope that that would remove a lot of the burden for her, knowing that he was still around and he was okay and that he didn't blame her for what she had to do. I think it also probably would be a big relief for her to know that Harry knows what happened. So that he can kind of take responsibility there too, but also she doesn't have to hold this secret anymore.
Yeah.
Because that'll eat away at you.
One of the things that I was missing in this entire series, in this entire book, was a little bit of extra time with Thomas. I was fully expecting Thomas to show up and to be part of the band of marauding vigilantes that were going to set things right in Chicago, and that he was going to be feasting and breaking heads and all kinds of stuff.
And have instead, all we get is
brooding Michael.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, brooding Thomas. Until the very end.
Feeling bad.
Until the very end.
Well.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, that very end was kind of one of those moments where I said, oh, okay.
Good.
Well, let's see. We've had a porn set. We've had.
Good on you, Justine.
All right. Let's go with that, shall we? And then Harry going, yeah, I don't think I need to say.
Yeah,
here.
It's like I think we can move
but
on.
But I was so happy that it was the one person that Thomas loved the most who found a way to be able to help him the way that he needs the most.
Yeah.
So that she can take care of him again. Because that means, and I cannot think of her name right now, and it's
Justine.
Justine. It means as much to Justine as it does to Thomas for them to be able to touch, for them to be able to connect and him to feed.
Yes.
And I just think, I was kind of like, wow, okay. A little bit uncomfortable, but at the same time, you know, do what you need to do.
Choices.
They are who they are. And
Choices. She
was very, they've been very aware of who they are for a really long time. And so I'm glad that they're finally going to get to be together.
Choices. Powerful, 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 powerful issue that runs through this. What other things do we need to talk about? Do we have some questions that we probably should talk about?
Well, we've been covering them as we go, but two that we haven't really talked about yet that are pressing issues.
Okay.
That we must hit before we go.
Star Wars.
What would your inner sanctum look like?
Oh, okay.
Oh.
And what kind of memory would you use as a weapon?
You go first.
What would your memory weapon be? I think mine would be more like the X-Men. Which is funny that Harry is thinking of all of these X-Men comparables that he has at the very beginning. Oh, I'm Shadowcat. Now I'm Nightcrawler too, and stuff. I'm
bam.
that's the way I would want my fight to go. Is more like a superhero battle that you would see right off the page or right off the screen, and not. I like Star Trek. Don't get me wrong. I love Star Trek, but I would want to see it more as a superhero battle type thing, I think. And I don't really know what memory I would use. I mean, I got, you know,
not what memory you would use, but how would your memories manifest? What kind of a weapon would you have? Would your memories manifest as?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've always, he was talking about Nightcrawler and Shadowcat and all them. I always resonated with Wolverine.
Because there'd be a lot of slashing and knives.
Because there'd be a lot of slashing and a lot of short temper and a lot of, you know, short guy angry. A
lot of blood and guts.
Yeah, I'd probably.
That does sound satisfying.
Very Wolverine-y.
Mental blood and guts.
Megan, how about you?
For me, I imagine a World War II scenario.
Ooh.
Kind of a D-Day bunker.
Ooh, yeah, we planes. Didn't talk about the World War II D-Day bunker, did we?
Nope.
I change my
planes and bombs we'll and
I change my answer. I like that one.
Right. And I just imagine I'd be machine gunning people down with my memories.
Nice.
Just lobbing memories of playing with my nieces and nephews at everyone.
There you go.
TARDIS.
A TARDIS.
TARDIS. Unassuming on the outside and much, much bigger on the inside.
All right.
That would be what my... Yes, and cheesy. Craig is in the room and he has to throw... He has to lob things at us. Yes, it's cheesy.
It's extra cheesy.
But it was... There are things about that are really interesting. And what would my memories manifest as a weapon?
Yeah.
Lightsaber.
All right.
I like it.
That.
Yep.
I like it.
It would be a lightsaber.
Predictions for Cold Days?
It's going to take a lot of it's going to, at least the first part is going to take place in the world of the Fae. I would like it to continue from where it was, but none of the books ever have. So why would it?
Yeah.
Well, this one picked up pretty close.
Yeah.
This one picked up pretty close.
It did in Harry's mind, and then in the real world, it was 6 months later, but you're right.
That's true.
Yeah. I think we are going to see the beginning of the story taking place completely removed from the world of mortals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I wonder how much we're going to see of Harry getting to know Demonreach.
Yeah.
And getting to find out why the connection between Harry and Demonreach existed prior to Harry getting to Demonreach.
Yeah.
Because there's something about this connection that Harry doesn't know, but Demonreach does.
And it's something that had senior council members
very concerned nervous. About. Yeah. Very concerned about. And the fact that Demonreach is working with the Queen of Air and Darkness.
Well, their motivations converge.
They converge.
Yeah.
So they're working together, but something about that makes me say, that's kind of hinky.
I want to see, I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm hoping it kind of, I kind of hope it happens that he and Fix get a moment as knight counterparts. Not like a sword throwdown, but more of a comparing notes.
I would love to see them show up at Max.
Yeah, something like that would be great. Kind of like a night convention where we get together and compare notes, you know, more like that than a throwdown.
I have the feeling that the first thing that Harry's going to be required to do is going to put him in conflict with Fix.
Oh, could be.
And they're going to have to meet in order to try and figure out how they're going to resolve this.
And wouldn't it be nice if they just like sat down and had a conversation? Here's some donuts and coffee. Let's talk this over.
It'll be interesting to see because Harry, I mean, he's very much not Lloyd Slate. So.
You think Harry's going to run into the gruff that he had to deal with before?
Eventually he will.
That would be pretty good.
That's not over. Eventually he'll meet up with that guy again.
I hope so. My last thought on this book was him going and seeing Maggie.
Oh, right.
Oh,
that was heartbreaking.
It wasn't heartbreaking necessarily to me. It was more of a just like a, if I were going to, my heart was going to explode with happy joy. It was that. I mean, that she was there at the carpenter's house was just the rightest of things.
With Mouse.
And that was one of those things. I was so happy that Harry kind of got to have a minute with Mouse and with Mister to acknowledge to have these two animals who he spent so much. He basically spent his life with these two animals.
Yep. And he got a moment with Mister
too.
Mister
was the reason why everybody knew that Harry was there, and Mouse is the reason why Harry was like, okay, I can die. Everybody's going to be fine. Maggie's going to be fine.
Yep. And the fact that he shows up and there's this army of guardian angels around the carpenter house.
I know.
Like, Michael is the single coolest character in this whole dang series.
And when Uriel looks at him and says, he's earned it.
Oh, yeah.
He earned those. That was pretty...
Cool. That was
pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was a part that just made me go,
okay, guys, can I read Cold Days now?
Yes.
Yeah!
We can read Cold Days now. We're not reading anything else in between.
Yeah!
We're going to just read these and go. We're going through these quickly.
We're only doing one episode on this because we want to get through, because Peace Talks is out and we got to get to it.
Yeah, so
before Battleground comes out.
We've got Cold Days, And then we've got
then skin game.
Skin Game.
And then Peace Talks.
Which skin, that oh. title makes me kind of go, hmm. So
I still think that Negloshi comes back in that one. I don't know if that's true or not, but I had the feeling that we weren't done with the Negloshi.
I don't think we're done with, I don't think we're, well, anyway.
So
we've got those two books. Then we get to Peace Talks, which just came out. And then we've still got one more coming out this year.
Right.
Yep.
Battlegrounds, right?
And if yes. Battleground. And if we hurry, we can get to Battleground by the time it comes out, which from what we're hearing about, just chatter. I'm not, no spoilers.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of reaction to Peace Talks that makes me think I want to read those two really close to
back. Yeah, really close together. So if you've been keeping notes and trying to keep up with what we're going to read, we talked about the possibility of maybe reading some steampunk or doing some other stuff in the meantime. No. What we are going to do is we're going to crush through all of our Dresden stuff. We're going to read it as quick as we can. We're going to try and get on track with all the rest of you that have been saying, would you please get through these books so that we can talk about the ones coming out?
Yeah.
We're going to do that. We're going to have some
fun. We're going to do that so that we can get those out of the way in time for the big
Rhythm
Sanderson release.
Yeah.
Coming out later.
Yes, we got a lot going on here in the Legendarium, and hopefully you are enjoying it and coming along with us for the ride.
That's not even including what Red Team is doing. I mean, we got stuff, people.
Stuff. Lots of stuff.
Listen
going
to
on.
Us, because you love us and we love you.
Enjoy the stuff.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.